Hello and welcome to the Witterings Fitness Podcast with me, Ben Price, and Rory.
Hello.
Hello. I'm back.
He's back. But where has he been?
Where has he been? So I have literally got back from 1 month in Cambodia, a rather extended trip. And yeah, thought I'd update you all on what my travels were like.
We need to know. We're going to start off with Reach was the charity you were fundraising for, Ben. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, so Reach is it's actually an amazing charity. It's a school in Siem Reap, which was set up by a girl or lady called Emily, and really amazing person, lovely person. And she has set up this NGO, which is more or less self-sufficient. It's provided employment for some of the locals, some really incredible young, you know, people, some teachers, Cambodians, and it lifts these kids, gives them a completely different experience. You know, most of these kids are living on the side of the road in shacks, and it creates this space where they can come, they can be creative, they learn English, everything's taught in English, and that offers them something different from their regular schooling, which is, you know, bearing in mind this is a fairly communist country, and they're taught certain things, and actually English is not taught as regularly. And that's even if the kids can go to school, if they can afford a school uniform. They have to have a school uniform to go to school, which is kind of absurd, you know, country which is riddled with poverty.
So why did kind of what prompted Emily to start the school? Like, what's her ethos? What's her drive there?
So she has been working with other NGOs and doing similar things. So I think the previous NGO was called Feeding Dreams. So she had been quite involved with them and maybe a few others, and I think she felt that she could do a bit of a better job basically. And and like I said, the transparency is quite key when it comes to a charity, because I think a lot of people,
yeah,
we feel like this is how I felt anyway, I do want to give to charity, but I don't just want to give it mindlessly to a big charity which may not sort of create,
yeah,
do so much with my cash I'm going to give them. Whereas okay, so it was nice to see it happen there.
Cool, let's stay on that one for a bit then, because there'll be a lot of people listening who think they'll remember the stuff that came out in the media a few years ago about Oxfam, about how much, and other large kind of charities and NGOs like that, how much is soaked up by money paid to fundraisers on the streets, or the kind of board, or the, you know, employees of those charities. And then particularly overseas, people worry a lot about local corruption and that money actually ending up kind of where it's intended. So here with Reach, obviously, that's money spent on the children. So just tell us a bit about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could see exactly where the money's going. You know, they're not a major, you know, big old charity. I heard about it through word of mouth, through Leo, one of the members, whose friend Ollie is also one of the directors, and Ollie was the one who kind of formed our cycling team. But yeah, you can see where the money is going, and it's pretty incredible, the setup they've got out there. It's better than some of the schools in the UK, I would say, like in terms of how engaging it is for the kids and how nice a place it is. It's pretty incredible.
Cool. That sounds great. I want to come back to all that good kind of serious stuff and dig in a little bit more to your kind of experience in Cambodia in general, and kind of you mentioned to me about, you know, coming away with a different perspective. So we're going to end there. But in the meantime, let's tell everybody what you actually did. So like, what was the physical challenge? Let's get all the kind of bum Vaseline stories out the way. So first of all, what was the physical challenge?
So the physical challenge was 650 kilometres in 8 days. There was a little rest day in the middle, which was lovely. And it was tough. It was, it was hard. It wasn't so much physically difficult. it was physically difficult, but it was more the dealing with the heat and you know, negotiating the bumps and the pain in the bum.
Okay.
And dealing with that.
And how, what was the like number one bum pain solution?
Lots of cream, which I ran out of at one point, which was very upsetting. So padding and cream.
Padding and cream.
Essential. Okay. Yeah, keep it clean. Padding and cream.
Good. Good. So what were the main takeaways from the physical challenge before we move on? So you mentioned heat. What did you learn from a physiological point of view? What could anybody learn who's listening to this, who does like endurance type stuff and they want to travel overseas and maybe do an Ironman in Southeast Asia or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, let's be kind of fair. I mean, there was, whilst you know, I've done triathlons and things, the other people on this event were not triathletes by any stretch of the imagination. Like, they were very much normal people who maybe hadn't trained to the extent that I trained, and some people had trained more than I had trained, because actually I didn't train a huge amount for the event. I think I probably underestimated it a little bit. So lessons learned is hydrate. You know, I've never drank so much water in my life in a single day. I think we probably were near 6 liters of water, and you need obviously the salts and the electrolytes, because otherwise you're just never going to absorb that water. So and dealing with the heat, I think the best thing I did, I had a backpack with the water sort of, you know, bladder in it.
Yeah.
And I actually filled that with ice, and so just pure ice. And then I had two like water bottles on my front, like in a little pouch, which I also filled with ice. I didn't figure this out until like halfway through the ride.
Yeah.
But load up with ice. Okay. and then drink a lot of water and electrolytes and general kind of just eat as much as possible. Endurance racing, or endurance, it wasn't a race, but endurance events are, you know, low kind of physical skill and low kind of physicality, and just being able to eat and drink and stay alive. Okay. And survive.
Well done.
So I'm going to interrupt this podcast because I have an extremely exciting announcement that I am going to make. So this will be the first time I have spoken about this. Rory and I are creating a new coaching group. The coaching group is a higher level coaching group than what we are able to do at Wittering's Fitness. The group is going to be called the Resilient Entrepreneurs Club. And we're looking for people who are entrepreneurial and they also want to create positive ethical impact in the world outside of their business or through their business or charity. So we know that we're quite good at coaching without sounding too big-headed. And we know that we can help people unlock certain blockages in their brains, which may be stopping them achieving what they really want to achieve, and to help them find their purpose. So that is what the Resilient Entrepreneurs Club is about. Like I said, really excited to get it going. And what I'm going to do now is play a clip from Rory during one of our brainstorming sessions about what we want this club to look like. And I think he nailed it on the head with this. So with no more waffle from me, I'm going to play the clip. And if you are interested in getting involved in this group, then all you need to do is just get in touch with us and we'll consider you for coaching. You need to be a certain type of person who's going to be really open-minded to trying new things. And obviously prioritizing your health and well-being is a big part of this, because as Rory says in his clip here, you can't have that kind of level of impact without having really good physical and mental health. And we are pretty good at helping people achieve that. So here goes, and see you soon. Cheers.
The mission of the REC is aligned with the mission of WITFIT, which is to inspire and unleash the potential of 1 million people. And the reason why we want to inspire and unleash the potential of 1 million people is not just because we want 1 million inspired people. It's because we know that if you're resilient, you're well-balanced mentally and physically, you prioritize your health, you're healthy, you're walking around in a good state of mind, you're going to make better purchasing decisions, better firing and hiring decisions, better parenting decisions, you're going to be kinder to people,
we live in a fractious political situation, don't we? If we can impact that through people's health, ultimately we create a better society. And so these million people that we're going to reach it by coaching people through REC, who influence the lives of hundreds of thousands of people through their businesses, yeah. their charities, everything that they do.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. Because we're not going to find a solution to the environmental crisis, to whatever other crisis, if everyone's walking around in some sort of haze because their physicality's off. Like, we need to sharpen every as many people up as we can so that they can go and solve our problems. We've got an energy crisis, we've got an environmental crisis, we've got a healthcare crisis, we've got all this. There's a lot that we need to sort out societally.
Yeah.
And we stand a much better chance of doing it if we're all clear-headed and healthy. And obviously what we're good at is going, well, that starts from us. That starts with us. Yeah. Starts with us. Flows through our coaches, through our members, but obviously in this more direct way, through people on REC as well.
Thanks for listening. And like I said, if that sounds like something you're interested in, just get in touch and we will consider you for some coaching. So let's get back to the podcast. Cheers.
So as you're kind of moving across the country, what did you learn about the history of the country and kind of the current state of things today?
Yeah, I mean, the history is fascinating. So I've been to, you know, very fortunate to have been to quite a lot of different countries in the world. And one of the main things that struck me with Cambodia is how genuinely lovely the general population is. I don't know whether it's their history or if it's their Buddhist kind of culture, which I love. I think that's brilliant, and or maybe it's just a combination of all those things. But yeah, so the history, there was genocide in 1970 to 1975. I think I might have got those dates a little wrong, but yeah, mid 70s there was an insane genocide, which a third of the 7 million or so population were killed. And obviously that's left a huge mark. And, you know, I've read stories about people who have survived that time, and even those who have survived obviously carry those scars around with them. And it's pretty incredible. And today there's a huge divide between those with money and those without.
Mm.
There was actually... So at the end of my 2-week bike ride, I managed to go on holiday for a week onto the islands with Ellie, and there was actually a land grab, like an illegal land grab going on the island. So the army had come along and they were spray painting. This is in Koh Rong Salum, if anyone knows it. They were spray painting the resorts and just telling people to move out within 2 weeks. And if you're a local, there's pretty much nothing you can do. You just have to move out of your restaurant that you've been running for 30 years. Some of the foreigners were going to court and fighting it. But it just, you know, what that highlighted to me is how lucky we are in this country.
Yeah.
To, yes, okay, things aren't perfect, but we're not just going to be suddenly carted out of our, you know, business in the next 2 weeks with absolutely nothing we can do about it. So, yeah, I gained a different perspective on things for sure.
So in terms of the friendliness of the people and how they were reacting to this like land grab by the army, what's the kind of big mindset lesson for everybody out of that?
I think it's gratitude. Is that, you know, for me it was gratitude. I mean, even just, you know, cycling along and I had to stop off for a toilet in somebody's house and they just let me in, and you could see what they had, which was nothing really. It was a couple of mattresses and some mosquito nets and that was that. And that was it. And there was rubbish everywhere. And you just think, we're lucky. We're so lucky to live in a place where we can't just get booted out and, you know, we complain about things and actually we've got everything that we need. Even just food and shelter, you know.
And then in that final week, after Ellie had gone home, you got to spend some time at the school at REACH itself, didn't you? And you did. I know you did some work with the teachers and the leadership team there. Obviously, you know, the Wittering's loss was Cambodia's education system gain as you were helping out the teachers and the kids. But tell us a bit about that, a bit about the teachers and what you were doing with them, and
kind of what you've left with them to continue to work on?
Yeah, so I feel quite lucky actually to have been able to coach these amazing young people, because I learned a lot from them, and I coached them in the 90-day coaching world, which is you know, what we do with our members. So starting off with a kind of big picture macro look at things, like where do you want to be in the long term, who do you want to be a hero to, and then working down to your kind of quarterly goals and setting that kind of vision, and then working through some of those issues that you might have in your belief to be able to achieve those things, or just challenging reasons you can't do it. And they were bloody good at it, to be fair, really good at it. They were very open-minded. They were really you know, appreciative of the training, and I actually managed to do a couple of sessions with them, and they were fantastic. Yeah, and
it's great to hear how open-minded they were, because often, and we've experienced this with our members here and other people who we've coached, it can be quite confronting and difficult for people to ask themselves those questions.
Mm.
So, like, what can we learn from the teachers at Reach? Why do you think they were so sort of open-minded? And
yeah, it's a good question. I guess maybe being a bit younger, or maybe they are just those types of people. They are open to talking about these things. And they're actually going to reuse the stuff I taught them and teach it to the kids, so that it becomes cool. Normal to talk about this stuff. Because I think the problem that we face with a lot of our members is it's just so not normal to talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
That you just accept what you've been told your whole life, and you never challenge it. And it, you know, that happens in Cambodia, happens all over the world. So I think perhaps it was more, maybe it wasn't such a Cambodian thing, but it was more the fact that they were just a group of teachers and they were very open-minded, and they're in a kind of place where they're developing themselves all the time. I mean, these guys are working at the NGO and then doing teaching at the university, teaching English at the university in the evenings and doing other courses. Like, they are smashing it. They're on it.
Do you think, given the history in Cambodia and the genocide and the Khmer Rouge and like everything that transpired there, and you know, we stood here, didn't we, on a previous podcast, we talked to Tom Petch about that, his experience there. I've been to Cambodia on holiday and seen the killing fields and things like this myself. It's like the country essentially kind of reset, didn't it?
Mm.
And as you talk about the poverty you saw, people living by the side of the road who kindly let you use their kind of toilet, and they just had a mattress and not much else. And do you think that makes people more receptive to kind of think about the future and what they might be able to achieve and to kind of dream a little bit? Or is it just about these particular types of people who are obviously, like, you know, generous with their time and their energy and their intellect, who are teaching at the school and at the university?
Yeah, I think it's hard to make that kind of broad generalization, because education is the key to this stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, there'll be people out in the UK and Cambodia, and they'll have been told a certain narrative their whole lives, and they'll never have questioned that narrative because no one else is ever questioning that narrative around them, I suppose.
Yeah.
And but once the education starts coming in, then you're encouraged, hopefully, to start questioning things.
Yeah.
And you're allowed to. And obviously in a authoritarian society, you're not allowed to question things. And if you do, you could get in a lot of trouble. That's and that's still the case in Cambodia. Like, that is still the case.
Yeah.
Like, you know. But I suspect within 5 to 10 years something quite big will happen in the country. I mean, I'm not a political observer or analyst or anything, but you know, there is an attitude about a lot of the people I spoke to, not necessarily at Reach but out on the ride, and some of the sort of people I spoke to, it was kind of interesting hearing their perspective on how they thought the country was. And
what was the again, I know, I appreciate it's hard to generalise, but the people you chatted to outside of Reach, what was the kind of general feeling and perspective about the future of Cambodia?
I think they're quite hopeful. I think they, the thing is that they're aware of what's going on. Like, they're aware of there's corruption. You know, it's not like they're blind to it. And and talking to some of the people on the islanders who were getting kicked out, they're frustrated. You know, rightly so. They're frustrated about what's going on. In general, it's part of their culture to not be confrontational. But I suspect that will change. Something will change in the country. It'll be interesting to see what happens there.
And what are the teachers at Reach doing to try and get the kids to think a little bit differently about their futures?
So they're just asking the question. Ask the question, and it's the same as what we do. We just ask that question. It's not encouraging them necessarily to think one way or the other. It's just opening their minds and challenging them, and hopefully they come to their own answers.
Okay.
Being okay, like making that safe place, which I think is important.
Cool. So before we wrap up, I want you to talk to me about kind of any perspective shift you might have gone through while you were there, or that's something you're trying to keep in mind kind of since you've come back. In terms of, you know, as you said before, gratitude, perspective, just keeping things in context.
Yeah. So we all have our issues, right? We all have things and challenges that we're facing, and I don't want to say this and sort of say that other people's challenges and are not worthy, or they should feel bad for having, you know, feeling a certain way towards a challenge. Because, you know, often we say, oh, you know, what you've got going on is not that bad. I mean, you know, I saw a guy in Cambodia with no hands.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't feel bad about what your problem is. But I'm not saying that, but that is what I feel now when you do see somebody who's had their hands blown off. And when you see somebody who's had their hands blown off by a landmine and they're still persisting with life and they're still trying to run their own little business, I just think that was so inspiring to me.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's a true story of a guy in Siem Reap selling books at a bookstore. No hands. And I just sat down and I was so taken away. I was just blown away with this guy. I didn't know anything about him. And so I wrote him a little note and just said, you've really inspired me and I think you're awesome. Keep doing what you're doing. And he didn't speak any much English, but I just gave it to him and said, try and get someone to translate that for you. And I bought a book and he actually gave me a note about his story because he'd probably been asked it 100,000 times. He was actually a Khmer Rouge soldier forced into soldiering. Didn't want to do it. Was training somebody in the jungle, moved something out the way, went bang. Wakes up in hospital 3 days later, no hands. Like, imagine that at whatever age he was, you know, probably 15, 6, 20 or something like that. Very young, I should imagine. And he tried to commit suicide by pulling a grenade. Must have been, you know, I don't know how he's going to do that with no hands, but he tried to do that, you know, to end his life, but his friend stopped him. And, you know, many years go by and he's begging on the streets and eventually he sort of starts to think, how could my life be in the future? And he starts to dream about his life. And eventually now he's got wife, he's got kids, he's got his little bookshop. I was just like, incredible. I didn't know any of that before I wrote the note to him, but I was like, that's just an amazing story of perseverance. And I'm worried about, I don't know, you know, whether or not something's gonna, yeah, just something trivial. It's just
running out of bum cream.
Yeah. I'm worried about how sore my bum is and this guy's got no bloody hands. Like, yeah. Get a, you know, put it in perspective. I mean, we're bloody lucky. So, you know, yeah. I just keep thinking how lucky we are and yeah. I am, you know. And you know, you hear that story and perhaps you resonate with it, but I've heard lots of stories like that. But when you go and see it and you actually meet that guy with no hands and you see him, and that's a whole different thing. So yeah, I kind of recommend that people go out and have these experiences. I think it's important to get out of the bubble and see how other people live and deal with the issues that they're dealing with, and things aren't so bad after all.
So talking about recommending, do you recommend this challenge for Reach?
Highly, highly recommend that you do this challenge. It is hard, it is hot, but there were people on there who weren't particularly fit, so you know, I think most of our members could do it. Yeah, highly, highly recommend it. Very rewarding experience, very like amazing. You bond with people you would never normally meet in any other scenario. I made some great friends from all over the world. Met some yeah, funny people from Australia and Canada, and yeah, it was great. Yeah, nice. And Cambodia, obviously. So yeah, there'll be something that you've shared with a group of complete strangers, where you'll never ever do that again, you know, unless you go and do it again in Cambodia, but you'll never do it again with those exact people. It's incredible.
Once in a lifetime.
Yeah, definitely.
And if people are inspired by listening to the story, Ben, and they want to donate to Reach, how do they do that?
So just go to the Reach website. There's a Just Giving page. As a collective, we managed to raise £103,000 for the school, which will help run. I think it takes £300,000 a year to run the school. So we're basically a third of their running costs for the year, which is pretty great from one bike ride.
Yeah, absolutely amazing from one bike ride. I'm going to finish with two questions for you. So, three word answers for both.
Three words, okay.
So, first of all, what impact did you leave on Cambodia with those kids at Reach and the senior leadership, the teachers? Like, what did Ben give Cambodia in three words?
In three words. Hopefully, inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
Inspiration and some money.
inspiration and money. Love it.
I think I think that's more important than money. I think you know, going there and giving that coaching was, you know, it was more important than any money you can give them, because they can hold that with them and they can teach their kids and they can, that can proliferate.
Amazing. And then the final question to end on: what did Cambodia give you in three words?
A different perspective. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Really good. Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Rory. Cheers, mate.
Bye-bye.